It's the State of Gaming Podcast.
Ba-ding. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the State of Gaming Podcast from Popzara. That's right, Popzara's State of Gaming Podcast with the P's. This is Nathan Evans, managing editor of said Popzara website. Back once again to talk about video games, talk about all this stuff, but I can't do it alone because, frankly, I can't keep up. That's why I have a co-host. Co-host knows more than I do. He basically should be leading this thing. Mr. Corey G-Man, Gory, whatever we call you, Corey Gallagher. Corey, welcome back.
You know, you stumbled around a bit, but you got there. I'm pretty
exactly.
impressed.
Well, the truth is, you know, like, let's be honest here. You know a lot more than I do. I'm getting old. Eventually, they're going to take me out to the woodshed. You're going to hear a bang. And, well, that
and then we have Then we have meat tomorrow night.
That's true. Like, meat's back on the menu, boys. But anyway, we do this every month. We talk about what's going on. We talk about this and that. We try to keep things positive. And for the most part, we succeed. Been doing this a very long time. However, all things must change for the better, hopefully. Change isn't always for the better. Like, sometimes change is really bad, and then you course correct, and you go back to what you did, and you celebrate the old. That's not what we're doing. We're going forward. The State of Gaming Podcast will slightly shift focus for the first time ever, because we want to bring everybody a better, faster, stronger, meaner, very Daft Punk sounding, new version of it. That's why, if you follow this thing religiously, and I know there's like three of you who do, maybe four, I don't know. All those VPNs get in the way. This is the State of Gaming Podcast for April 2024. That means we're probably missing March, and for good reason. The format we usually take is we talk about the biggest games that come out for the month. That will remain, because that's the meat and potato, the real meat, not the human meat. But the real meat of the potatoes is games that come out that you want to play. I think you and I both like that. That works. We're going to keep it. However, the original impetus of the show, years and years back, even before I did it, was always the NPD, National Purchase Diary, a.k.a. now Circana. But I think you and I both recognize, and I think we've kind of hinted at it, I think we both kind of come to the same conclusion, like the cotton gin, that it really wasn't viable anymore to basically center so much around Circana and video game numbers.
So basically what it boils down to is I have said every single time we do this podcast for actual years now, I've been subtly hinting. I've been like, hey, by the way, this is useless. Sales numbers are useless. Unless you are the person making the money from the sales, why do you care about the sales? Well, they are useless.
No, useless for the most part. But hey, first of all, they do fuel fanboy rage. They do fuel conversations. They do fuel a lot of discussions about what's happening outside of just the titles. That being said, though, I would think your view is right. Yeah, they're useless for the most part. But my view is always that they start conversations. The problem is, and as much as we like Circana, as much as we count Matt Piscatella as a fan, Circana's Matt Piscatella is a fan of this website. He's been on this podcast multiple times. But the problem is they're not consistent. And we would always sort of steer this date of this podcast around their releases, and that frankly was becoming a little bit of a problem when we would be talking about 1 month but having to go back in time 2 months to talk about what happened 2 months ago. It just wasn't consistent. It wasn't very good. And so I think going forward, if and when we ever talk about Circana, if and when we ever talk about video game sales numbers, if and when we do that, it will be completely conditional to whether or not they are available at the time we're going to record, which is going to be a lot more consistent.
The point my co-host is trying to make is that we typically had to delay our podcast to line up with when the Circana numbers came out. And at a certain point, especially when, as I've said, I don't think they're very helpful. I don't know that we need more fanboy rage. I think there's plenty of that already.
Well, there was some. Here's the thing, though. You and I did look.
And how often did this boil down to, hey, it's Mario Kart 8 Deluxe again. Breath of the Wild again.
Yeah,
it's Super Smash Brothers again. Like, I feel like a monthly podcast needs to be about what's new for the month. That's why you do it monthly. If you're not going to do it, if you're not going to talk about the new, then why make it a monthly thing at all? Just do it whenever you know you feel like Circana's updated enough.
I think, the NPDs, the Circana, let's just be fair, and I think you could agree with what I'm going to say. It was a vestigial organ on this podcast. It was something that begat this whole thing in the first place that had
The podcast initially started as just solely a discussion of the NPD / Circana numbers, and now we've made it something more, something better, because I'm on it.
Well, the truth is, though, I mean, without the NPD numbers, you would not be a part of this family. Like, you exist as a Popzara editor because of NPD. You know
that's
that.
True. There was an editor of ours who I guess will go unnamed because we don't want to draw any unnecessary attention to this guy, but because he's kind of creepy, let's be real. And he used to.
Let's just say this. He was an interesting guy who never said a bad word about us.
Yeah, he's always been a fan of the site, I suppose.
Yes.
Point being, he eventually left the site for what we call greener pastures, and I discovered this, and that is what led me to apply for the position that I have at the site, and eventually led me becoming the senior games editor and actual owner of Podzara.com.
I will say this, though. I've had many discussions with him. I've had many discussions with people inside the industry personally, and you know this. I don't exaggerate this. I've had discussions with alternative websites, and the truth of the matter is there was always some effort to make NPD or Circana, whatever you want to call it now, into some version of like the box office analysis that you get on every website. I think
once again we're trying to make video games into films, and that doesn't necessarily work.
Or Billboard, I would say, for music, but the truth of the matter is that with Billboard, Billboard is the standard of which we judge music sales, for better or for worse. It has become totally corrupt. Like, if you follow that, like, if you don't like the new Beyonce album, there's something wrong with you. Why don't you have it? Do you have Beyonce's new country album?
Absolutely, I love it.
Exactly, I love it too. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about. I listen to it right now. But the fact of the matter is, with movies though, like if Godzilla X Kong, the new Empire comes out, we know exactly how much money that thing made every day. Like, it is pinpoint perfection. They will maybe fix the numbers the next day, but for the most part, we know what's going on.
Right, because the numbers are reported not just by the movie studio itself. They're reported by the movie theaters. And, you know, we have a lot greater access to that kind of thing. I've always said, and I'll say it again because I love saying it, that the people who are least knowledgeable about the industry, about the games industry, are the ones whose money makes it run because they're too invested. And I just don't think that following sales is helpful for people who already kind of see what they want to see.
Well, again, it's also become a standard. Like, if I were to go to the Circana website right now, and I say this with respect to Matt Piscatella, like, their tagline is, quote, the single source of truth for a video game. The single source. That's it. Just them. And that to me, portends that they have become more involved in the marketing of this. And we've known this for years. And at this point, I'll just say the integrity of the accounting system as it exists has been compromised to the point where I think you and I both do not feel comfortable sharing this information that doesn't seem to have a value into what our goals are.
You're making it way too complex. I just think math is boring.
But the truth of the matter is, it's just, like you said, it's not fun when it's the same thing over and over again. And I think instead of looking back, let's look forward.
Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and take the last word on this matter.
Yeah.
When even Reddit, my favorite people to pick on, say that sales numbers and concurrent players on Steam is not relevant enough to be worth a post and it'll be removed if you just post that, I think we can also follow along and not do it either.
And I also think, let me say the last word, and I think we'll be done with it, is that the problem is that as things become more and more digital, as retailers become more and more digital, this is not a field that Circana or even NPD ever really bothers with. And so, therefore, we've always put the asterisk for entertainment purposes only, but now it really is for entertainment purposes only. They are not a real reflection of what's going on.
I cannot recall the last time I walked into a GameStop, I'm going to be real.
Well, you know, GameStops are basically pawn shops.
And they always were, and I've always said that too.
No, legally, absolutely legally, like, they have to get pod licenses.
Yeah, like, it is a problem when the biggest retailer in your hobby is a pawn shop, and now that's not really the case anymore. Now we have the terrifying digital future that's supposed to scare us all with these things about ownership and such, and I'm just like, look, like, oh no, you're paying $70 for one AAA game, right? Or you're paying $15 for a subscription.
Like it or not, though, like it or not, you and I have major disagreements on very specific things, and one of the disagreements you and I have always had is physical media. And, you know, I've always been a fan of it, you've always been more cavalier about it, let's just say.
You know, I'll take it if I can get it, but the fact of the matter is, if I had a physical copy of every single Steam game I own, I'd have 5,000 physical copies of this crap, and I couldn't fit all that anywhere.
You would be that guy, that guy or girl, on every YouTube video where they have that bookcase in the back where they have all their games listed.
That's an entire genre. Actually, I took up my friends and I used to watch quite a bit of these because they're funny, and we used to call them masturbatoriums. It's I'm going to retreat to my masturbatorium to recover.
Yeah, they have like a secret room, like they've outfitted their garage. Or
sometimes
their,
they're
or their
like, oh, my wife slash husband didn't like me doing this, so I got a new room or I built a new room, etc. It's like, dude, you know, you could just get like a Steam library. I promise you, it's not going anywhere.
I feel very bad for what I'm going to say because I know I'm going to piss off one person. But they go through all this trouble. They look at they've studied the thing. They've studied the Mr. Beasts. They've studied the Angry Joes. They've studied all the YouTube things, and they think, I know what to do. And they go to Home Depot and they build the soundproof room. They get the bookcase. They do all this. They get the lighting, the ambient lighting. They get all this stuff, and they look professional. They got the Final Cut, whatever program you use. Everything's perfect. They got like 5 subscribers.
Yep.
You know, because supply.
All this outlay. And
yeah.
Turns out it was a bubble the whole time, and it's already popped.
Yeah, it turns out. But you know what the funny thing is? Podcasts are here to stay because podcasts are lo-fi. They're cheap. You can do it with a microphone. You don't even have to be good.
Don't even need the foam triangle things on the wall to mute the sound. I can be as loud as I want.
I'll say this before I go. Final thing. There's nothing to do about games. I'll be fair here. Have you ever seen those ones that copy so bad they started selling like wallpapers that look like books and look like games? You can just paste
in the
background.
Yeah, I saw that. It was especially back in COVID times.
Yeah, it's like, look at me. I'm learned. Like, no.
And if I'm like me, books are for eating.
If I ever die, I'd look back and they, like, what was that Lionel Hutz on The Simpsons? He's like, these books aren't just good looking, they're filled with useful information, just like that. You know, it's just, sometimes I would rather have somebody be messy and a slob, like, you know, the stereotype, that plays games, that reads books. Like, I don't give a crap how nicely you're organized. If you're too organized, I don't believe you.
You know what, Nate? Out of everybody I know, you are by far the most messy slob, but also the most well-read person I know. So congratulations.
Messy slob? Yeah, don't reveal my secrets. So, but anyway.
All right, so we have a podcast here. The podcast these days is about the biggest games of April 2024.
Yes.
And there's a little bit of everything else, too. And we're not talking about Circana, which is good because I hated that part. I'll be real. I never liked doing that.
So again, we will only bring up the sales if it is a news item. Like if something sells a bazillion copies and it saves the world, if it's extraordinary,
it absolutely has to cure something terrible, like a horrible disease, like vitamin A toxicity. Just if it cures that, we're in good shape. Anyway, the biggest games of the month of April 2024, the stuff that's coming up that you're excited to play. Mm-hmm.
This is a big list, by the way.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty good month. The issue with the April is that all the good stuff comes at the end of the month. The next couple weeks are kind of slow. I mean, I guess there's one exciting game next week. Anyway, first thing on the list that you got here, Stellar Blade is our next big PS5 exclusive from Sony.
Mm-hmm.
It is Korean.
Is this the one with all the people talking about it?
I mean, basically every game on this list is the one with a lot of people talking about it. Otherwise, it would not be on this list. Except there is one game that you kind of came out of nowhere. I'm not sure how you even knew what this was, but we'll get there.
Well, let me ask you a question. Is this the one with the butt cheeks?
Yes.
Okay, that's for some reason in my mind, because I do not follow outrage. I thought this. You're gonna laugh at this. I'm gonna lose all my credentials, but screw it. I'll go for it. I actually thought this was a sequel to Setsuna's Revenge.
Setsuna's Revenge?
Yes, what was the one with the what was the depression game?
Hellblade.
I thought this was
What?
Yeah, I was wrong. I don't follow
you're
the outrage.
Close. Anyway, so yeah. what Stellar Blade actually is, you know, honestly, I haven't read a gaming news site in forever. I just kind of keep track of this
stuff. Exactly. That's all they're talking about. It's just nonsense.
All right, yeah, so Stellar Blade, really solid hack and slash action RPG on the PS5. If you like that kind of thing, you give it a shot. There's a demo. Mm-hmm. The demo save data carries over. Give that a shot. Mm-hmm. Keep your save data. If you like the game, play it on the full version, which comes out at the end of this month. Speaking of games coming out this month, the next one is a big one. Like, this is... this one has been in the works for quite a while, and I know a lot of people are very excited about it. Aiden Chronicle 100 Heroes is finally coming out.
Is this the one you say you don't know how I knew about it?
No, we're going to get to that one. Not there yet.
Okay.
So yeah, Aiden Chronicle is a Kickstarter darling, and it's basically the spiritual sequel to a game series called Suikoden. And
come on. 100, was it 101 Heroes?
100 Heroes.
Yeah, I love the first one. I never really got into the others.
I mean, there's only one of these games. This is a spiritual sequel.
The spirit. Oh, okay. It's kind of like, okay, I see what you're saying. But yeah, Suikoden was good. Suikoden was a very good series.
It was very good, yes. And I'm sure this will be good, too. If you haven't had a chance to try out and experience the world of Aiden Chronicle yet, there is a game on Game Pass called Aiden Chronicle Rising. And it's like a little short prologue sort of game that you can play on Game Pass. Also very cheap if you don't like Game Pass. It also does not actually play anything like this game. It's an action RPG, but it's good. It's good. You should try it.
You should try this game that plays nothing like this other game to get a taste of what this game might be like.
Yeah, it's got the characters and the setting and stuff, so I guess that's cool. Anyway, moving on from there, next one is a game I'm very excited about, very, very excited for. I love this series. The next game is Saga Emerald Beyond.
Hey, you are a professed Saga fan.
Yeah, I really enjoy the Saga games. They're interesting from the perspective of they're weird. They're weird. It's hard. They're often not documented very well. There's the sense of exploration and mystery behind these games you don't really get in a lot of stuff. I guess the closest comparison, if you've played like the recently released Dragon's Dogma 2 and you didn't read a guide, it's a little bit like that. You just stumble into weird crap sometimes, and it's super cool. Saga Emerald Beyond is the latest in this series. It's very similar to the previous entry, which is Saga Scarlet Grace. It is going to upset our friends at Digital Foundry because it is a simultaneous release on mobile, which means it looks a bit like a PS3 game. It doesn't really bother me. Might bother you.
Look, you and I were discussing this very thing. I think I like the Digital Foundry crew a little more than you do, but let's be honest. If they like the game, they are very forgiving on performance. And if they don't like the game, then they'll make you hate it. So
yeah, well, I don't know if they'll play this game at all, to be honest. But so Saga Emerald Beyond, it's much like the rest of the Saga games in the recent entries in the series, kind of like Saga Frontier and so on. You choose a protagonist from a selection of five in this case. You've got a vampire. You've got a pair of cops. You've got this traditional protagonist kind of guy. You have a witch who collects cats and uses her cat weapons to do more damage if you have enough cats. And the last character, which is actually the one you play as in the demo, which is also out right now, and you get to keep your save file, is a robotic VTuber that loses the ability to sing and gets put into a tank.
So the dream.
Yeah, you play as a tank. It's friggin' cool. Saga Emerald Beyond coming out later this month. Coming out like alongside Stellar Blade, so basically going out to die, but is what it is.
But you know what? That's the thing, though. But these games, these particulars, like the ones that are niche, they are survivors. They are like bacteria. They will find an audience if the game is good. You know this.
Hey, this one found an audience in me. I'm looking forward to playing it. So here's the game that I mentioned. I don't even know how the hell you knew what this was, but... they made another Demon Slayer game, and the last Demon Slayer game...
You mean the biggest franchise in the world that no one talks about, Demon
okay,
Slayer.
Okay, here's the thing, it's a weird Demon Slayer game. They've made, I think, maybe two previous ones, mine might be one. Point being, this is Demon Slayer Mario Party. It's called a Demon Slayer Sweep the Board, and it is Demon Slayer Mario Party.
You know a franchise is popular when it starts ripping off Nintendo like spinoffs.
I didn't even know they were making Demon Slayer Mario Party until I had to look it up from this list. And here it is, and they're localizing it.
Do we have Demon Slayer Kart yet?
I was just about to say, they're going to make Demon Slayer Kart sooner or later, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, there it is. It's Demon Slayer Mario Party. I would have put this down in other notables, but I am open to discussion on the matter.
The thing about Demon Slayer, look, I haven't seen an episode, I've never played a game, but I know of it. It's like Dragon Ball for me. It's so popular.
It's got tone issues. Like it's one of those shows that's like it's really dark and grim, which, you know, that's the majority of the show, and it makes for some good viewing. But then every so often there's just a comedy episode.
Hold on a second. You're saying an anime show has tonal issues? Show me one that doesn't. They all do. All of them. Maybe. Even like Grave of the Fireflies had jokes. You know?
Did it?
I'm sure it did. It's funny.
I don't know if the grave of the fireflies is funny.
You know, Barefoot Gen. Can't get enough.
The next one is Tales of Kinzera Zao.
Okay.
Which, Tales of Kinzera Zao.
Now you're making fun of me because I didn't know what Demon Slayer was, but you don't know what Tales of Kinzera Zao is. Come on.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It says here you can become a warrior shaman and and wear Sun and Moon masks, and you punch enemies, and it's got some Metroidvania stuff going on, and oh, thank God, it's got controller support. That's on the Steam page is a big graphic they made.
Some games don't. Some games don't.
Like what?
There was that first-person shooter game that came out a couple years ago.
This is a 2D Metroid game.
I know. By the way, there's lots of Metroidvania games coming out. Yep. Like there must have been like some eggs like getting ready to hatch because there's a whole bunch.
This is one of those genres though that's kind of hard to mess up. So like generally speaking, even a bad Metroidvania is still pretty good.
Yeah, it's unusual, but there are games that don't have controller support. But I agree with you. Maybe Metroidvania should definitely have that, and they shouldn't.
Well, this one.
About it.
Definitely does, and it's got this cool tribal aesthetic going on. I don't really know much about it, but I'll probably play it because it's going to be on EA Play.
Is it?
Yeah.
You know, when I first saw the artwork for this, what was that one game about the little girl on the island? Tichio or Tichaya?
Chia.
Tichia, yeah. Like, it has that aesthetic that could be like a Disney, like Star Wars series.
Yeah, it looks
a
bit like Moana a little bit if you've seen that movie. Of course you've seen that movie. What am I saying? There's a game that came out, I want to say about a decade ago, called Outland, and it looks a lot like that. So if you're into that kind of thing, into this kind of...
It looks pretty. Disney, I mean, it's colorful.
Yeah, it looks like a good time. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I just hadn't looked into it much. What I have looked into, because of recent very sad events, is our next game. Akira Toriyama's Sandland is coming out this month, and he's dead.
Yeah, he died. R.I.P. to Akira Toriyama. And by the way, because of our new format, we don't really have a chance to talk about him extensively, but I saw that Microsoft was resurrecting... What was the game he made for Xbox exclusively back in the day? Blue Lagoon? Blue Dragon. And it's
Are they?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they're bringing it back, but I know they had... Like, they resurrected the artwork from it for, like, Xbox Dashboard.
That's very cool of them.
Yeah. Yeah, RIP to the most recognizable... I would say... Would you say Akira Toriyama was the most, or one of, like, the two most recognizable, like, manga artists in Japan?
Oh, I would say it's got to be him and...
Tezuka?
Yeah, Tezuka, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Tezuka.
Are you one of the people that say anime?
I should be.
You speak accent? You don't speak Japanese very much, but do you speak accent?
I see.
Yeah.
So Sandland is interesting because Toriyama, his initial plan back in the day, this is actually based on a very, very old manga of his. I want to say like maybe might have been in the 80s, in fact, maybe even before Dragon Ball. And his idea was, I want to write a story about a tank. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's a cool idea. And he's like, okay, what a wonderful plan. I wrote the story and I just got to draw it. Oh, crap. How do I draw a tank? And apparently this was like the hardest thing for him to make out of all the stuff he wrote, because it's really hard to draw vehicles. That's neither really here nor there. This game is an action RPG. You play as a little demon guy. You ride around in vehicles. You got a Jeep.
It's got Santa Claus.
It's got Santa Claus, yeah. You ride around in, you got a mech, you got a Jeep, you got a tank. Looks a little bit like Metal Max. Have you ever heard of that?
I've heard of Metal Max. You know what's funny, though? I would say the most adorable tank I've ever seen in a video game was when Mario turned into a tank in Mario Odyssey.
He turned into a lot of things in that game, and they were all pretty cute. That's true.
This game
also has a demo. Unlike the other demos, this game commits a horrible sin, which is that the save data does not carry over, but... You should still take a look. Sandland, also pretty cool because, first off, there's an anime out. Anime, sorry. So if you want to watch that, I believe it's available on Hulu or Disney Plus. I watched like two episodes. It was all right.
Yeah.
It's fine. What else about it? So the original Sandland was not very long because, again, it was just Toriyama being like, I want to make a story about a tank. And he did. And he was like, great, I'm done with this. For the game, they actually drastically expanded the story. So there's a lot more going on. There's a forest land now too, not just the sand land.
I wonder how involved he was in the game.
I would imagine like games were in development for a while. He was probably doing well enough to like help out.
Yeah, I mean, do they still use his aesthetic for Dragon Quest?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, that's kind of important. So
like I don't think that's ever going to change. That's, you know, and I was talking to a friend of mine about this. I'm sure he had proteges and such who are going to carry on his legacy now that he's gone. Like
I think that's kind of what goes with it. If you're a very successful manga artist, then you have a legion of like helpers and, you know, assistants. That's kind of a Japanese thing too.
Yeah, and surely there's somebody who's going to take up the mantle now. So I don't think we're going to see Dragon Quest anything go anywhere, but it's unfortunate that he has passed away. Everybody's got to go sometimes though. Also, speaking of going, let's go on to the next game. Yes. Megaton Musashi Wired. Yes, is from Level 5.
Level 5. You don't hear that name a lot, but when you do, you take notice.
Yeah, Level 5 is, funny enough, we're just talking about Tezca. A lot of their stuff looks like Studio Ghibli, and this doesn't really. This is just a mech game. It's a mech game from Level 5. They also made Ni No Kuni. They made Yo-Kai Watch. What else did they make?
Goodness gracious. Didn't they make Professor Layton?
Professor Layton. Yeah. Professor Layton, yes. And a bunch of other stuff, too.
What's that genre of 1970s Japanese anime and manga, like the Gatchaman era? You know what I'm talking about? That's a Tatsunoko, is it?
It's Tatsunoko, yeah.
Like, it's got that very specific, like, Galgo 13 look.
There's definitely a look to a lot of their stuff, exactly. In fact, this game is kind of an interstitial game because their next big one is a action RPG called Decapolis that I believe is coming out next year. And if you have not seen the trailer for that one, you should take a look. It's very cool. What's that?
I was going to say, because I know you and I were big fans of Armored Core, and we always have. And as much as I love Armored Core, as much as I love From Software and all this, at a certain point, something inside you wants things to be colorful and bumpy and bright. And
yeah, that's what you're getting here. Megumi Musashi really nails that 80s, 70s kind of anime feel. Anime, there I go doing it again. It's got customizable mechs. It looks pretty good. On their April Fool's joke, Level 5's April Fool's joke, was a fully live-action trailer for this game, and it is hilarious. You should look it up if you haven't had the chance to.
Oh, nice. I'll definitely give it a chance. I do like the aesthetic of this quite a bit.
Yep, looks very cool. Speaking of games that you like and we'll probably play a lot of, Phantom Fury. Phantom Fury is interesting because of the name. Let's start with the name. So this is the sequel to a game called Bombshell, which was a top-down kind of run-and-gun shooter that nobody really liked because it was kind of bad. And from Bombshell, they made a sequel to that called Ion Maiden. Except you can't call your game that because it sounds a lot like a very popular band who get real pissy when their name is taken in vain. So that game eventually became known as Ion Fury.
But that wasn't the calling card of that game, Corey, because you and I chatted about this. It was because it was a Source Engine game, wasn't it?
It is a Build Engine game.
Build Engine, sorry. See, that's why he gets paid the big bucks.
Source Engine runs Half-Life 2, and we don't use that anymore, really.
No, actually, we do. There was a game that came out a couple months ago that you liked. You recommended it to me. What was it called? You gave it a good review, but you said it was kind of meh. It was built on the Quake engine, Quake 1 engine.
Also not the Source Engine.
What was it then? It wasn't? Are you sure?
The Source Engine runs Half-Life 2.
Source is Half-Life 2. Half-Life 1 was the Quake engine.
Half-Life 1 was, I think it was Quake.
It was a big controversy at the time that they would use that. They would downscale it to Quake 1. But right. You were a big fan of Iron Fury. Well, you were a fan of it.
Yeah, I wasn't. I don't know if I'd say I'm a huge fan of it. I think it's it really, really hedges super close to the Duke Nukem 3D experience. And I like Duke Nukem. He's great. G Fuel recently released a Duke Nukem.
I saw that.
Pack.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
But real quick, one more thing you left out.
There's an expansion pack.
Yeah, the Aftershock.
Aftershock. And I think you mostly played that one. How'd you like it?
Disappointing. It's,
I heard that a lot. I heard it's not as good as the original.
There is something to be said about about balance in a certain game. I don't mean like difficulty balance.
You couldn't get good, so
get good. No, I beat it. I'm just saying, but it wasn't as fun. It wasn't as frivolous. It didn't have that tongue in cheek. It's too much of a good thing. You know, one piece of bacon.
And that's kind of important because this is literally just Duke Nukem 3D, except you're playing as a woman. And Phantom Fury is the sequel to all of that crap that we just talked about, and it is more of the same.
I'll say this. Let me just ask a question. Is this better than the new Serious Sam games? Because those were terrible.
The new Serious Sam games suck. Almost
universally. Horrendous.
So, I say suck. You know, I have to couch that once again, as I always do in all these podcasts. Because when I say a game is bad, it's still better than being at work. You won't like the Serious Sam games that are new as much as
I would rather be digging a ditch than play those things again. Those things were terrible. Those things were terrible.
Around Serious Sam 3, they started being kind of iffy.
New games, the ones went all polygonal and everything. They're just glitchy messes.
Like since Serious Sam 2, that series has seriously not been serious enough. Anyway, we're not talking about Serious Sam. We're talking about Phantom Fury. It's a new game. It's coming out this month. It's Duke 3D. If you like Duke 3D, check it out. Other notable stuff coming out. So a game was released 15 years ago that basically redefined the face of gaming as we know it. And I'm not even joking about being 100%
kind of
serious.
Yeah, kind of.
Like, actually, probably one of the most influential games released in our lifetime. Maybe I wouldn't know if I'd put it up there with Mario, but I'd put it up there with like Final Fantasy VII. We're talking about Braid. Braid 15th Anniversary Edition. Now, you might remember Braid as a really, really, really big puzzle platformer that did a whole bunch of firsts. What's that?
No, I was going to say... I know where you're going with this. So
yeah, Braid did a whole lot of things for the industry. Braid is the game that kind of popularized digital only releases, thanks to its release on Xbox Live Arcade. Braid led off a whole explosion of puzzle platformers that lasted for about 3-4 years. They still come out, by the way. You can get puzzle platformers all over the freaking place. Braid is also responsible in no small part for the indie game revolution.
I also would say it's responsible for something else on the negative balance, too. The indulgence I think the video game industry does to sort of coronate a new phenom. In this case, I know it was the developer Jonathan Blow.
Yeah, there's definitely a sense of... I don't know that dev worship was quite the thing that it was before Braid. I mean, there was a little bit of it, but it was always considered kind of a joke. Like, ha-ha, John Carmack has a Ferrari, and look at his wife, ha!
Yeah.
But no, when Braid came out, I think we really started to see the rise of treating game developers as gods. And I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing, but we're not worried about that. Worried about Braid 15th Anniversary Edition, which I'm told has a whole bunch of new levels. If you haven't played Braid in a while and you maybe want to play some Braid, this has a whole bunch of new levels. I think it's like twice as long as the original game, in fact.
15 years. So think about that, though. 15 years.
Think about how things have changed. You know, back in the day, it was kind of weird. Like, oh, I don't know if I want to play Braid because I can only download it. I can't actually get it on disc. And actually, I think they did eventually release it on disc, but it took them a while. And these days, it's like, Alan Wake 2.
You know, 15 years from when Braid was released, and was it 2008, was 1993. 1993 is one of those years that if you and I chatted about this before when we did our best of, 1997, 1988 are considered two of the best years ever. 1993, no slouch. Pretty good year.
Yep.
So 15 years from there. So where will we be in 15 years from now?
Hopefully we finally got those brain implants, or hopefully I'm finally uploaded to the computer somewhere.
Look, I didn't put this on the thing, but did you see the Neuralink thing from Elon Musk's little conclave?
I did hear about that. People are like, oh no, it's terrible. No. Oh no, it's the end of human society.
Did you see what the guy did when he got the brain implant, right? The first human. You know what he did the first time?
What's that?
He played Civilization VI all night. And Mario Kart. Like, that's the first things he did, besides saying, like, writing a message, I'm going to go game all night.
So what does the thing do exactly? Can you play games on it, or how does it work?
Well, it basically uses brain synapses. I encourage everyone to look at it. I think we were all expecting a disaster, but I think they finally found a way to sort of correlate brain impulses and electromagnetic gobbledygook. It's science. It's magic. You know how magic works.
Yep.
And apparently they can coordinate with movements on a digital screen. But I always thought it was funny because I had actually read Musk's book, and his favorite game of all time is basically Civilization VI. So I think if you want to get in on this, you got to like what Musk likes. So you got to say, I'm going to buy a Cybertruck. I'm going to do all this stuff so I can play Civ all night with my brain.
I have to say, so what you're saying is you should read Sid Meier's memoir.
Yeah, Sid Meier. He did come out with one. Was it last year?
I think it was last year, yeah.
There are a lot of these gaming people writing biographies now, by the way. I actually just finished John Romero's one. Speaking of John Romero,
yep.
That's an interesting read. By the way, Sid Meier's book is called Sid Meier's Memoir, A Life in Computer Games, by the way.
Yep. Speaking of games, TMNT Arcade Wrath of the Mutants. I actually haven't heard about this. What is this?
Oh, goodness, I saw this. You ever heard of Raw Thrills?
You vague?
You never heard of Raw Thrills? Anybody? Raw Thrills?
I've heard that. I can't remember what they made. Raw Thrills.
They make arcade games. They're basically the spiritual successors. You speak about spiritual successors. They're basically the spiritual successors to what's that company name?
They make Midway. These things.
Yeah.
You see it like Dave and Buster.
All of them. They make them all. And they make everything.
They sure do make all of them. Look
they
at
make
that.
All of them. In fact, they got a new one out this year called Godzilla Kaiju Wars VR.
Yeah, it actually is all of them. That's crazy.
They
made Cruisin' Blast, too, which we reviewed on the site a while back.
Yep. So it's weird because, you know, these games are definitely not made to be played intimately. They're made to be played loud. You've never seen TMNT... Like, Herman, you know, Herman Exum, our tech guy, he's all into Raw Thrills. He loves Raw Thrills. So every time we're in an arcade, he always, you know, he'll educate me. But I had actually never even seen this version. But when I look at it, I'll be honest with you, I'm not saying the game's not good, but did you see the trailer for it? Have you seen what it looks like?
I'm looking at some images now, and I gotta say, it's not really selling me.
Yeah, it's got that, I hate to say, it's got, speaking of indie games, it's got that, like, 2010.
Yeah, it's got that plasticky 2010 yeah. indie games or toys kind of look to it. I don't know so much about this,
well,
but it...
Especially since it's coming right after Shredder's Revenge, which looked great.
So. Shredder's Revenge, which looks like an old game brought to life in the modern era. And what the hell's Harold Halibut?
See, you were worried that I didn't know what Demon Slayer was.
What the hell is Harold Halibut?
Look it up. You never heard of Harold Halibut?
I'm looking it up.
Look at Harold Halibut.
The hell are these graphics? Looks like it's got a style to it, certainly. They look like action figures.
Yeah, it looks like claymation.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to play it, but it looks crazy.
Well, what if it turns out to be like the best thing ever, though? That's the thing.
It's a point-and-click adventure game. It says here, handmade narrative game about friendship and life. That already cannot be the best game ever. It's not enough violence.
Did you ever see, for anybody who's listening, did you ever see that Charlie Kaufman movie called, I think it's called Amelisa, the stop-motion?
Oh, it actually is stop-motion. The trailer is them assembling stop-motion stuff.
There you go. Well, we've seen that before. We've seen that before in video games a little bit. You know, not as much as I think we should. But... No, we're not making fun of Harold Halibut at all. It actually looks quite beautiful.
Yeah, no, it looks very cool. Like I said, I'm not going to play it because I don't think there's enough violence in it for me. I want to kill stuff. Speaking of games where you kill stuff, Biomorph. I've been playing that.
But really quick, we're going to be talking about two games with bio in the title. So.
Yeah. So the first one is Biomorph, and it is it's another one of the Metroidvanias. And like I said, I don't think they make a lot of bad ones of those. And this one is pretty fine. It's very... So I believe this is the first game from its developers, and I think they may have misunderstood what exactly I want out of a Metroidvania. What I want out of a Metroidvania is to run around, platform, fight enemies. In this case, the gimmick is that you kill enemies, you can turn into them and use their powers, and that's cool. What they think I wanted was all of that, plus a very wordy story, plus just have the characters never shut up.
Here's the thing. You and I had a slight disagreement on a game that came out. Was it last month? We've never discussed it on this podcast, but so this will be the only time we ever do. Contra Operation Galaga.
I thought it was great, and I know you weren't a big fan, though.
No, I've probably beaten that game more than you ever will, but I don't say that as a bragging point. I think the game is fine. I know it's from developer WayForward, but the story, like when I'm playing the game, nobody wants a story out of this game. Nobody asks for this.
Well, like when you don't like a game, but you keep playing it anyway, and you beat it over and over again, that means that you like something about it, but something is really rubbed the wrong way. In this case, it's the plot.
Well, like. What was it? Like 10 years ago, 14... It was a long time ago. WayForward made a version of DuckTales. Did you ever see that?
And I did. DuckTales Remastered. And it was very chatty.
It was very chatty. But the reason they were reluctant to cut the chatty out is because they actually had the original voice actors from the show.
Right.
And then they died making the game. So you're not going to cut out... You're not going to cut out... you're not going to cut out... what was his name? Dick... what was the guy who played...
I remember you telling me this. Yeah, the guy who played Scrooge McDuck died while they were making the game.
Let me see. Alan Young, by the way. We love Alan Young. Alan Young, he was on Mr. Ed. He's fantastic. But he died while making the game. They're not going to cut him out. So the problem is, when I think WayForward made Contra years later, you can skip the story. You can go right to the arcade mode because no one gives a crap about the voice. And I know... Steve Bloom is in it, like anime voice actors, and it sounds.
He's in everything.
It sounds like anime voice actors. Sorry, anime. So
anime, yeah. So anyway, Biomorph. Yeah, what I've played of, I haven't played a huge amount of it yet because again, you know, vitamin A toxicity. Don't take multivitamins ever. It was very distracting. But point being, I feel better now. I'm gonna play more of it. What I did play is pretty cool. It's got this really cool looking 90s
cartoon. I like the main character design a lot.
Yeah, it's a cool looking cat guy. He's got a pair of like magic gauntlets that turn into like blades and stuff, and he can turn into enemies. So you turn into like this enemy with a headbutt, and you can headbutt through the walls.
He looks like Stitch from Lilo and Stitch, but
yeah, like Stitch or like Ratchet a little bit.
Do you remember back in the 90s, speaking of the 90s, when they had like Mario clones and Sega would just pump these things out left and right? And they pumped out one game that had the same premise of this. Do you remember Kid Chameleon?
Kid Chameleon, yeah, not quite the same idea, but I see what you're going for.
But you know what I mean? Like the idea is like, let's just take the Mega Man approach and turn it into every enemy. So, but no,
that's exactly what we did.
This game looks very pretty, though. I'll give it. I might give it a chance, but
what I played of it is all right. But also speaking of bio games, Bio Gun also exists, and Bio Gun goes a different direction. It's also a Metroidvania kind of thing, except in this one, I believe you are a little cell guy and you are fighting viruses inside of the human body, or no, a dog. You're in a dog. You're trying to save this dog from horrible viruses, and if you've ever seen Osmosis Jones, that's kind of what we're doing here.
You know what's funny? Just a segue a little bit. Do you like James Cameron?
Yeah, I saw Avatar. It was really good.
Yeah, Avatar. You like basically if you grew up in the 80s and 90s, you know who James Cameron is. Of course you do. Terminator. He just announced that when he's done with Avatar, you know what his next movie's going to be? He's going to remake Fantastic Voyage.
Like what, you shrink down and go inside the human body? And
yeah, but the premise is, he says, sci-fi's gotten too nice and it's gotten too family-friendly. I'm going to make it hard sci-fi. This is the guy who made Terminator. So, yes.
That sounds exciting. Yeah, see that.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. So,
speaking of games that are exciting and look like they're worth playing, I mean, this looks pretty good, except it's going to be in Early Access on the 16th, but that's fine. You know, I've actually kind of come around Early Access. I hate to say it. To a large degree, I've kind of come around Early Access.
No, I don't think so. I think what you've done is what's that disease you get when you are kidnapped and you become attracted?
Stockholm Syndrome.
You have Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah, I just know that it's never going anywhere, so I've come to get used to it.
No, because you've gotten so used to crappy released games being unfinished.
That is very true. You know, there's a lot of stuff that, you know. Yeah. And here's the thing, you know, you buy the game when it comes out in Early Access, you play an hour of it, like, huh, this is fun, and then like a year later, you come home from a hard day at work, and it's like, whabam, our game's at 1.0, ha ha!
Well,
I already own this, great!
You think about it, Baldur's Gate 3 was Early Access.
And it is a very different game from the first Early Access release, let me tell you.
That's crazy. You know, it happens, it evolved, like, we've just gotten so used to unfinished crappy games that you can't tell the difference anymore.
Exactly. Hey, speaking of games that you can't tell the difference from, actually, you totally can. This has nothing to do with Biogun. Children of the Sun is Children of the Sun. Yeah. So basically, you're this girl, and she's escaped from a cult, right? And she's gonna take revenge on the cult, and she's gonna do it by sniping them. And you don't play as the girl; you play as the bullet that she shoots at them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever said, "What game had like a trouble bullets?"
Was it Super Hot? No, was it?
Yeah, no, Super Hot. No, that wasn't it. There's definitely a game where like you'd shoot a bullet and you could steer it. It's like the Stinger missile from.
Murder Death Kill. Was that Murder Death Kill?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. You shoot it and you could steer the bullet. And the goal of Children of the Sun is like you snipe people, but it's actually more of a puzzle because you're trying to snipe everybody with a single bullet. And Wanted, you're steering around obstacles.
Yeah,
and
like Wanted. Yeah.
Going through people's heads, and yeah, it's a pretty cool idea. I don't know if it's going to be Game of the Year or anything, but it's a cool idea. It looks cool.
By the way, final scene in Wanted is why we don't have a sequel. So,
yep, pretty much. Hey, speaking of stuff that looks cool and is cool, and I'm kind of surprised it exists. Did we talk about this last month? I don't remember. Slave Zero X. So this is wild. So Slave Zero. First off, can't believe we called it that. Still. Second off,
wait, was this the sequel to the Dreamcast game?
Yes, we did talk about this.
Yeah. So is it? Why is it back?
It is back, I think, because the license was cheap, and we wanted to make a real cool side-scrolling brawler. It's a bit like Strider, and
why is it back on this list? Didn't we already talk about this?
Oh, you made the list.
Okay, first of all, Slave Zero X looks crazy.
Sea of Thieves is going to be on the PS5, and it's real unfortunate, too, because, like, I like Sea of Thieves. Here's the thing about Sea of Thieves and about me. I'm a dick. I want to be mean to people in video games. I want to... If somebody else is having less fun because of me, that makes the game more fun. And I fully understand and appreciate that that is not how you develop a thriving community. You don't make games like Sea of Thieves for people like me, because then all the people that don't like to be abused by people who are better than them at video games, which is most people compared to me, will stop playing. So they're bringing out Sea of Thieves on PS5, and they're adding in the ability to play in servers that do not have player-controlled AI enemy pirates that will kill you and steal your stuff.
Well, I know this game has been locked to Xbox and PC because, of course, it's a Microsoft game.
Well, I don't know that somebody has gone for so long since this game came out to have not had a PC or a phone with the ability to play cloud gaming that they have to play this on PS5, but by God, you can do it now.
Well, because PS5 is the dominant platform going forward right now. It's the dominant non-Nintendo platform. But I'll say this. This is a Rare game, isn't it? This
is it is, yeah.
And let's give it a little bit of credit, though. When this game came out, what was it, 3-4 years ago on the Xbox?
Longer than that.
But this game came out in the miasma that was, let's make a clone of Overwatch, or let's make clones of those MOBA shooters or whatever. And how many of those games are still around? Almost none? Even Overwatch is sort of dying on the vine.
You know, I gotta admit, if I could find a way to play like the single player of Battleborn, yeah, I might do it out of curiosity, but you can't.
But there's so many, though. Like, even your guy, Crispy, what's his name? Blazinski or whatever. Even his game died.
Yeah, Cliff Blazinski made a game called Lawbreakers. Anyway, Sea of Thieves is nothing like any of those. I think the point Nate is trying to make is that this came out around that time and maybe got ignored a little bit in favor of those games.
I'll say this. I tried it. Not my thing. But I'll say this.
Were you killed by an enemy pirate?
No, I want a pirate game. Can you imagine like an open world pirate game that doesn't suck?
Good. We have this game called Skull and... Oh, you said doesn't suck.
Yeah, it just seems like the easiest thing in the world to make. But they say the same thing about movie pirates. Like pirate movies have all been terrible, except and when
they did make two good pirate games. There were Assassin's Creed, Black Flag, and Rogue, but those came out like a long time ago. So.
Well, one of my the best part, I think it was in Assassin's Creed Origins, which is the Greek one. Was it the
Odyssey?
Didn't that have the pirate ship where you can take over the ships on the sea?
Yeah, it's not really a pirate ship, but yeah.
But you know what I mean. But it was still in a way a little piratey, and that was a lot of fun. And they got rid of it, and no. So
rest in peace. Yeah. Finally, Grounded. Grounded is another Xbox exclusive, or former Xbox exclusive, and it is coming to the PS5 and the Switch. And it is a survival, open world, crafty, explorey thing. It's basically the plot of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and you're playing as the kids.
Yeah, this was one of those early access things from Microsoft, too, and just, it makes me wonder, you and I have said it before, and I think our prediction is coming true, and we'll cap it off with this, is that, you know, Microsoft announced that they're working on new hardware. I don't know what that's going to look like, but it seems like a change is coming to the way we do exclusives, and yeah, Microsoft seems to have more success when their exclusives are no longer exclusives.
You know, I didn't grow up in an era where, you know, I was in my, let's say I'm in my 30s and it's like the 90s and
let's,
I have to
let's
choose.
Say.
Yeah. Let's say that I'm in my 30s and it's the 90s and I have, you know, adult money and I can buy whatever I want. So maybe if that were the case back then, I wouldn't have understood the idea behind the console wars. But when you were a kid and you get one game a month and you have one box to play them on, then yeah, it might matter a bit to you which box it is. These days, though, I don't know that it matters much. I think it's for the best that we're getting rid of exclusives as a concept, except for Nintendo.
It's just, and by the way, Nintendo, I would say you're exactly right, but I would say there's always a caveat, and the caveat is the same thing with home computers. Like, you can get a PC, you get any type of PC you want, or you get a Mac. And
people
say
Macs. But do people still buy Macs?
But that's the thing, though. But Macs exist in the same world that Nintendo exists in. Because you have companies that are so dedicated to moving things forward in one direction, eventually, like maybe they don't do everything you want. Maybe Nintendo doesn't give you everything you want. Maybe Apple doesn't give everything you want. But you're really kind of glad because you're glimpsing into something different. And I think that alone is a reason why to be excited. But to your point, yeah, everything on PlayStation is coming to PC. Everything on Xbox is coming to PC. So there you go.
All right. So let's knock out the last thing. Obviously, we're not doing Sakai anymore.
By the way, rip.
Yep, rip. Moving on from there, we have everything else. Our favorite section with the news. Apple officially allows retro game emulators on the App Store. Previously, if you wanted to do emulation, you typically had to have an Android phone. Now you can do it with your iPhone if you want to do that.
Legally. There's RetroArch and everything on Apple TV and everything. You could do this.
I want to say it again, we saw with the Yuzu case last month, it was last month. We say legally, If the companies ever get it up their butt to make you not able to emulate stuff anymore, they're going to win. So don't get too used to it. But for now, you can play retro games via emulators on your iPhone, and that's cool. The Atari 400 Mini is announced.
Yeah, what do you think of this? We didn't really talk about this, but what do you think of this?
Let me look at it real quick. That is, look at that thing. That's a big joystick.
I brought this up real quick. First of all, this is one of those things where it appeals to a very small niche group, but we actually did cover the newest title. I think they're called the Gold Master Series from Digital Eclipse, which, you know, we both are fans of.
And the newest one is LlamaSoft, the Jeff Minter story. And Jeff Minter, he's a character, man. His games are something else. He is something else. It's crazy.
Real quick, have you played the Jeff Minter game yet?
I've not. I keep forgetting to, but I really want to. Based on, like, it's much like the Karateka game.
Oh,
like,
yeah, it's exactly
If it's anything like Atari 50, yes, I absolutely want to play this game.
Well, here's the thing. We have a review for it, and I'll say this. Do you want to play Attack of the Mutant Camels, or do you want to play all this? Probably not, unless you're British and like 50 or 60. But I'll say this. Jeff Minter is, like, we talked about Jonathan Blow a minute ago. We talked about Akira Toriyama. This is a guy that was very integral to the development of video games in Europe at the time. If you watch the documentary now, he's lovable. Like, the guy hangs out with what he calls the beasties. He's got llamas, he's got yaks, he's got everything. And his games reflect that. And even if you don't like his games, I think you can still respect him as a person, as someone who is very enthusiastic about what he does.
And just imagine, if it weren't for European games, we wouldn't have Eurojank games today. Like, imagine, imagine you couldn't play anything made by spiders, any of these RPGs that only kind of work. Or imagine you couldn't play Super Putty Boy in the SNES.
I'll say this. People blow your mind. You knew this, probably, but the same team that made Lemmings is the same team that made Grand Theft Auto. Think about that.
Yeah, that's crazy, especially with GTA 6 coming out at some point in the future. Who knows?
I don't think anybody involved in Grand Theft Auto 6 had anything to do with Lemmings. So that's the problem.
There is going to be a PS5 Pro, gosh darn it.
Man, what a waste.
Yeah,
waste.
What games do I even need this for? Well, like, everything runs fine.
Well, here's the thing. I'm just going to say this, because we go through this nonsense every couple months with Nintendo 2 or Switch 2 and PS5. If I wanted to say, you know what? It took me, 4 years to get the PS5 up and rolling. We survived a pandemic. We survived massive theft. You know, we had struggle getting out of the gate. Now we're selling pretty good. You know, now we're doing stuff. Let's screw it up. Let's create an iterative console that nobody really wants, that won't really improve anything, and put a lot more put a lot more work on our developers who won't get a penny extra for it.
It's just the weirdest thing. Like, it's the exact opposite of my concern about the Switch. With the Switch, it's like, why haven't we done this yet? Everything runs like crap. With the PS5, it's like, everything runs pretty fine. I don't know that I need any more horsepower on this machine.
Well, you know how I feel about this whole thing, and I'm being a Luddite here a little bit, but I'm a little older than you, so I grew up with we didn't grow up with better consoles. We grew up with, here you go, here's your game, you play game, good. You may do. You didn't know what frame rates were. You didn't know what if your game didn't slow down, you didn't know what any of that meant.
I remember playing Dark Souls, the first one, on PC, and my friend of mine was like, how do you play that? It's 30 FPS. I'm like, what the hell is 30 FPS? And then he shows me a mod that makes it 60 FPS, and I'm like, oh.
The problem is, I think we've gotten used to the idea that we shouldn't, again, we blame Digital Foundry for this. I can't enjoy this version of the game because it's not practically perfect in every way like this version. And I think maybe we've gotten a little too spoiled, and we've gotten a little too used to that something needs to be.
Hey, who's this we here?
Well, here's the thing, though. You love the Switch, and you criticize it, but you do love it, right?
Yeah, I use the Switch all the time. Every day.
And you know, you were really proud of that one game you bought, the Super Collector's Edition of that Umbrella thing. Remember that?
Unicorn Overlord.
Unicorn Overlord. Nothing to do with umbrellas. The fact that you knew what I meant.
Whatsoever.
The fact that you knew I meant unicorn I said umbrellas.
Where did umbrellas come from?
But yeah, there are performance issues. But at the end of the day, your brain will eventually, and I'm not saying it's Stockholm again, but your brain eventually is okay with it. You're like, okay, I'm doing this.
And yeah, also as I will eventually mention in our review for Unicorn Overlord on PopZara, there are no performance issues whatsoever on the Switch.
But you know, I mean, you played the Princess game, the Princess Peach game, and there's obviously some.
Yeah, that game runs like crap.
So. But and I'm not saying you shouldn't have a better experience. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is that you have a game like Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, or you have something that people say, "Oh, I play it on Yuzu," or "I play it. I'm going to wait till this." That game's not coming to PC.
You can't mention them anymore.
Yeah, well, they're dead now, so they went away. But to be honest with you, that wasn't emulation. That was piracy. My point is that you have something like PS5 Pro coming out, whatever. Let's say it exists. In the old days, you had consoles like the Genesis and Super Nintendo. You know what they did? They actually pushed those things to beyond the limits of anything anybody expected. By the end of the Genesis days, you had full motion video, you had scaling and rotation, you had so much stuff that was, if you look back at the first generation of Sega Genesis games, it's not the same console anymore, but it is. Same with Super Nintendo. You had Super FX chips, you had everything.
But these days, we start to hurt a little, we just upgrade the hardware and make them buy a new one.
And the problem, though, is that we saw what happened with the Xbox One X, you know, the most powerful thing in the world. You know, we had the PS4 Pro with checkerboard and all that stuff. It didn't improve games in the slightest. It put a huge burden on developers who now, and it didn't increase the user base. It created a Band-Aid. And all that does, Corey, is that whenever Sony comes out with a new system or a new console, it's not going to look as impressive had we had a break. And I'm just saying, like, it benefits no one. And now they're even saying Grand Theft Auto 6 is not going to run at 60 frames a second on the PS5 Pro. So what's the point? The truth is, just be happy with what you have. Let the developers
sounds like
sing.
You guys should all buy gaming PCs. Speaking of stuff that's coming out that looks pretty good, you know, there was a day, maybe 3-4 years ago, when I could have said legitimately, like, oh no, this is getting a Netflix adaptation, it's getting a digital-only show, it's going to be terrible. I can't say that anymore. A lot of these digital adaptations of things, these TV shows that you watch on streaming, are actually pretty good. So
they're not bad. That's the thing. They're not as bad as they used to be.
They're definitely not as bad as they used to be. Some of them are actually stellar. Like, they made an anime of Cyberpunk 2077, and that is amazing. Well, like, that by itself basically revived that game because it's so good.
It did, and I would say The Last of Us, the TV show.
The Last of Us is good. The Castlevania is not bad. The One Piece isn't a game, but it was good too.
But the thing is, we're going through a renaissance.
Point being, they are going to make a Fallout TV show. I want you to just think about this for a minute. Fallout, the first one, was an old-school computer RPG, the sequel to a game called Wasteland. I'm not sure that most people these days who play a lot of games would really know the first Fallout, and yet here we are. They're making a Fallout television show.
By the way, a prestige show. Let's just say this. This is from Jonathan Nolan, brother of Chris. He's the guy who created, I believe he's the guy who created Westworld for HBO.
So yeah, they're making a Fallout show, and I bet it's going to be pretty okay. To be entirely, like, I feel like you'd have to try to make it not good.
There has been some, as you imagine, there has been some kerfuffle online regarding some of the footage and some of the intent. But I'll say this: I haven't seen the show. I'm not, like most people, I wasn't a big fan of Fallout 76. But I'll say this: it's got Walter Goggins as a noseless Western adventurer. Have you seen this? Have you seen Walter?
I've seen the trailer.
He's fantastic. Yeah, he looks fantastic. So we'll see. It comes out what, next week?
Yes, next week.
Next week it comes out. Where's it on? It's gonna Prime Video. So get ready for
ads.
Did I say
next week? And what I meant was Thursday.
Thursday, April 11th. Yep. But no, it comes out. So there you go. We'll see what happens.
Yep. Let's see here. No DLC for Baldur's Gate 3. See, I'm torn about this. On the one hand, Baldur's Gate 3, great game. Would have liked to see more of it. On the other hand, there's a game I like a lot: Pathfinder: Wrath of the Righteous. The game that you get now when you play Pathfinder Wrath of the Righteous is head and shoulders apart from the one you got to begin with. And that was a good game. That was a good game from the first step. But if you waited a few years and played the complete version with all the DLC added, all the new classes, new characters, it is 1,000 times better. So it's nice to know that if you want to play Baldur's Gate 3, you can play it now. You're not missing anything.
I do want to quote the developer. Right, I want to quote him. He says, "I understand there will be disappointment because people fell in love with what we created, but it was a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it doesn't need more." And I got to tell you something. What's the company? Larian Studios? Is that who did?
Larian, who also did Divinity Original Sin. They did it's a crazy, like, their story is crazy too. Their first game, I might have been their first game, was a Divine Divinity, which was a pretty blatant Diablo clone. And now here we are making the game of the year from last year.
Well, not only that though, but they've been very adamant about certain things, and they've been very steadfast. And they published this game themselves. Like, let's be honest, they are doing, like, you and I made a rule that we don't really talk about bad news in the industry. We don't talk about all the layoffs and all the controversies. We don't really talk about that. But when you look at a company like Larian Studios, they are kind of like Nintendo in a little bit, is that they're doing things their own way, in their own way, on their own way, on their own time, and they are being very successful at it in a way that boggles the mind. And I think they made a comment about the layoffs, and basically they said, yeah, we serve ourselves. We do what we want, and they're very successful at it.
Yep, that's a pretty cool thing. So, hey, the last thing we have on this list is Godzilla.
I'm cheating. I cheated with this, by the way. I put this
on
as a
cheat. Empire, a video game movie. Is it a video game movie?
No, not at all. But I'll say this. But I'll say this. When I was watching it, I actually reviewed this, and I don't review movies on the site very much. Are you familiar with the MonsterVerse films, like the Godzilla Kong, Skull Island, all that stuff?
Not really.
I'll say this. They are clearly modeled after video games, 100%.
I think the one Godzilla movie I've seen was Shin Godzilla, and it was really good.
Yeah, that wasn't modeled after video games. That was a thoughtful, thinking Godzilla movie. So, you know, kind of like...
Yeah, it was good.
Kind of like Godzilla Minus One. Did you see that?
Did not, but I did see Shin Godzilla, which was good. But I should see Godzilla Minus One.
Well, the director of Skull Island, his name is Jordan Roberts, huge video game nerd. I think he was hired to do the Metal Gear Solid movie coming out. Said he wants to make movies more like video games, whatever. So I'm not going to spoil this for you. There's no spoilers. But I'm watching this movie about big monkeys fighting big lizards and all this stuff. I love Godzilla. But this is such a video game movie, Corey, that when King Kong explores, when he gets a new area, you see the area open up and you see the title of the land he's in.
Like, I see.
He's on a giant fetch quest. I'm not going to spoil this for you, but there's a scene when he fights a giant chain. It's like Dark Souls. Like, this movie looks like Dark Souls. I'm not joking. He meets a chain-wielding psycho monkey who has enslaved the other apes, and he controls an ice-belching mega monster with his chain, by the way. So now Kong has to face this Dark Souls enemy, injures part of his body, gets a super power glove upgrade. It just gets stupid from there. I love this movie. It's so dumb. It's so stupid. But it reminds me of the best video game movie that we never got, which is low on story, high on content. It's what you're playing with.
Yep. Hey, speaking of what you're playing with, let's go ahead and wrap this up. There's one last thing I want to mention.
Controllers?
The automatons have been defeated in Helldivers 2.
Have they? I heard it. I don't really follow the Skull. I don't really follow the Helldivers 2 saga very much, but it's very entertaining from the sidelines.
Yeah, the automatons have been defeated. They're gone. You cannot play against them right now. You can only fight against the bugs. And the reason for that is very likely because we are about to see the release of the third enemy faction, the Illuminate.
You know, we promised we wouldn't cover Sarkana. We probably wouldn't cover this, but there is one tidbit I gleaned from their last report that Helldivers 2 is far and away the best-selling game of the year so far.
Tens and tens and tens of thousands of players on Steam, and that's just on Steam. It's got crossplay.
But you ready for this? This is the crazy part. It's selling the best on PC.
That's not really that surprising. It's one of those games, you know, you squad up with the boys, and you go and you fight. I guess you fight bugs right now because there's no more automatons. But
is it on Xbox or no?
No, I think it's only on Sony.
I think they're appealing to Microsoft to put it on the Xbox, so that would be interesting.
You missed controllers. Let's talk about controllers real quick. New ones. Let's see here. We have the MOBA. What are these things called? Hold on a minute. Let me check out the ones. I forget the name of a lot of these because a lot of them are Chinese.
Most of the good ones.
That's true. Yeah, a lot of the good ones actually are Chinese. The biggest one.
There was one I was going to talk to you about, but it's technically not a controller. It's a keyboard, but it's related to controllers. Did you, we both like, you like 8-bit do, right?
I do. The MobaPad M6 HD. They are a pair of Joy-Cons for the Switch.
What is it called? M6 HD, right?
Yeah, the okay. MobaPad M6 HD. That's what they are. Sorry. It slipped my mind. And I use them every single day. I do my treadmilling every day, and I have a stand for my Switch. And if you haven't tried this, by the way, and you use the treadmill, you really should. It's great. These Joy-Cons are amazing. They will make you look at your Switch in a whole different light. If you use it handheld, if you use it with the Joy-Cons off, it's delightful. Trust me on this.
You know what? For those who can't see them, they are very similar to the Hori pads. Have you seen those?
Yeah, the Hori pads. I don't think the Hori pads actually work wirelessly, though.
Do they not? But I know. But that was for a lot of people the best replacement Joy-Cons for this.
Right. Up till now, yeah. Generally speaking, that was what people would choose. And these are very similar. They've got these nice clicky buttons.
They're chunky too. They got some bulk to them.
They feel delightful in the hand. Let's see. The last time that I talked about the PDP Victrix Pro BFG Wireless, I don't think I did. So PDP, we're very familiar with them. They used to send us hardware all the time. They might still, actually. I don't tend to do that. It tends to be Harman. But their new controller is actually the latest version of their old controller, which is the Victrix Pro BFG. Now, this one has a bunch of cool things about it. First thing about it that's cool, it's wireless now. Previous one was wired. Wired controllers suck. Everybody says, like, hey, wired controllers have better latency. That is not true. You're not going to notice it. It will not affect your gameplay unless you are sitting in the most crowded room on the planet and you're playing in like the biggest tournament. You're in Vegas and you're at Evo. Unless that is the case, you don't care. Get the wireless controllers. Second off, the reason I did not use the original PDP Victrix Pro BFG much, the one that was wired, is because they took out the rumble motors. Did not have vibration.
Was that a PS4 version or not PS5, was it?
This was for PS5.
Really?
Not something you'd want, obviously, because the PS5 relies real hard on the vibration.
Well, I was going to say, there's a lot of controllers that are available, quote-unquote, for PS5 that are basically just rehashed PS4 controllers. So you got to be careful.
Yeah, but this thing is real spicy. It's definitely a controller I'd recommend now.
It's official, too. Official project. So,
yeah, it's pretty cool. And they look real nice too. Like that's a real nice looking finish in that thing. It's white and purple. It's beautiful. So my favorite controller company is FlyDigi, coming out of China.
How do you spell this?
FlyDigi, and they've recently released the FlyDigi Apex 4.
Apex 4.
Yeah.
By the way, you really got to spell these things right. By the way, people, if you're looking these things up, so.
You can get the FlyDigi Apex 4 on Amazon. In fact, you can get everything I just mentioned on Amazon with the sole exception of those Joy-Cons. If you want those the MobaPad M6 HD Joy-Cons, you have to order them from MobaPad. They will come to you from China. It will take about 2 weeks, depending on where you are, so be ready for a wait. But it's worth it. Those things are amazing. You will love your Switch in a whole different way. It's wonderful.
See, we're talking about Switchy stuff, and here Corey goes, and he loves his Switch controllers.
Yeah, Switch controllers are pretty good stuff. But the FlyDigi Apex 4 Pro, I also love that controller. It's a really good controller. You can get it on Amazon. It's not very expensive. It has this really cool, like, it's Hall Effect, obviously, as most sticks are these days, versus stick drift. But it's also got this interesting rebound mechanism on the stick. So, like, you know when you're, like, looking at something and you let the stick go and it kind of bounces back into position? This has a little bit of a spring to it. It's got a real tactile feel that also does not throw your aim off.
Does it make a sound like a bring?
Yes.
It does?
It does.
I was joking.
No, it actually does have a little springy sound. Like, this thing is very satisfying. My favorite part about it, if you look at this thing, it's got this white clear front to it. That actually comes off. And in one corner of it, you can see this little metal piece. That piece comes out.
You're saying this is for the Switch, but is it Bluetooth? Is it PC?
I think it works for everything. You get a wireless dongle with it. You can plug it into your PC. I think you can Bluetooth it up to your phone if you want to. So the cool thing about this thing, right? Take the front cover off of it. Take this little metal thing out of the right. That is a key that goes into the sticks, the little stick holders. And you can twist it to adjust the tension on the sticks. If you want your right stick, which is your aiming, to be a little bit tighter, you can do that. Want your left stick to be looser, you can do that.
Interesting. Do any of the expensive like pro controllers from Xbox or Sony have like tension tighteners?
So the Xbox Elite actually does, but you would never know because they don't tell you.
Let me ask you a question. I'm going to sound silly, but what exactly does that help with?
So a lot of people, I'm not really one of them. I like these things for the tactile feel of using them. I don't really mind much about the back paddles or the tension or whatever. But a lot of people will tell you that if you tighten up your tension a lot on your right stick, it helps you with your aim in games like Call of Duty.
I suppose so. I mean, but you probably have to have a really developed thumb for that.
The other thing, too, is you have to get used to using it. Because obviously, yeah, when you change, you're not going to aim as well as you did at stock and so on and so forth. Let's see. I think that's all the ones I have for now.
I think I have a good example. Would that be kind of like when you adjust the DPI on your mouse?
Yeah, very similar.
Yeah, so okay. See, that's...
Oh, finally. That's why you, controller... Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, that's why you listen to Corey, because we get that useful information.
Exactly. Finally, the last controller adjacent thing I want to talk about is the PlayStation Portal. I finally managed to get a hold of one.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, this thing was a nightmare. So the thing with a device like the PlayStation Portal, which is a very, very locked down, stripped down device, this thing is it's what we call a thin client. Basically, it is a device built to stream gameplay from your PS5, no matter where you are, as long as you have Wi-Fi, to this device, and that's literally all it does. It can do nothing else. Basically, it's a PS5 controller split in half in the middle of the screen. All it can do is stream gameplay. And when it's working, which takes a lot of finagling, let me tell you, it's fine. Like, it's cool that you can do it. I don't know that I'd ever take it out because it's very fussy. It wants really, really, really reliable Wi-Fi. It wants Wi-Fi so reliable that I went and redid all the Wi-Fi in my house to use this thing.
Look, I've never touched it. You've touched it. But I know enough about the, you know, the lifestyle around it. But I'll say this. I was optimistic about it. You and I talked about this. I said, Lori, let's review it. Let's do this.
I am out. Corey, not Lori.
No, I mean, sorry. What I mean is we talked about getting a review early. It sold out very quickly. It was obviously Sony did not manufacture
enough. And then they never restocked them. No, I still can't get one.
I think it's a dead product, to be honest with you. But what's funny is it didn't come out of nowhere. I think it came out of this desire for everybody and their brothers and sisters to have a Switch version of something. You know, we saw this when, what was it, 2010 with the Kinect, Xbox Kinect and PlayStation Move. Like, oh, they have motion controls? Let's have motion controls.
So I'm going to go a different direction. I don't think this thing is the Switch. I think this thing is the Wii U gamepad, because the actual intended use for this device is, let's say you have kids, let's say you have a partner you're living with, and let's say they're using your TV, but you still want to play Rise of the Ronin. Mm-hmm. Well, here you go.
Well, that's true. I mean, I agree with you, but I think that's the purpose of it. The purpose of the whole thing was to give, because I think we all agree that if we're going to calculate the innovation of the Switch, number one thing on top is people like the mobile mode. They like it. They like having it. It's why you have a Steam Deck. It's why you have the ROG. It's why you have all these things. And I think whatever the next Xbox looks like, it's going to probably look closer to a Steam Deck than a console. But this is Sony's, like, let's just throw something out there. And I'll tell you the thing that got me most of all. This thing only uses Wi-Fi 5. Doesn't use Wi-Fi 6. And it certainly doesn't use Wi-Fi 6E.
And that is a serious issue for a device that is this fussy about Wi-Fi. Look, yeah. I had a pretty decent, kind of old gaming router and an extending device. And that was fine. That was fine until I got the PlayStation Portal. And when I got my PlayStation Portal, I was angry that I have this nice Wi-Fi here and it's still not enough. So I'm going to do whatever it takes to make this thing work. What it took was buying a bunch of Deco 6E routers and making a mesh network around my entire house. And now, and only now, is this thing usable.
It definitely feels like one of those Sony products that they throw out, you know, to the wolves and let it fend for itself. Like, I hate to say it, I think the PSVR 2 is also becoming like a product that Sony is rapidly not supporting. And I think, you know, that's the problem. I think that's how you damage a brand, is when you slap the word PlayStation on something where it clearly it's not up to the challenge.
Like, it's kind of like how the Virtual Boy is still a Nintendo console. We're never going to forget it.
Yeah, but Nintendo did. Like, yep. Nintendo forgot it. But that's what I'm saying. Like, if we're in the middle of a really weird inflection point in the video game industry where we don't know who's going to survive, like, when it comes to consoles. We don't know what's going to happen. And I think, like I said, I think maybe people expected a little better from Sony. I think that maybe they had thought they had visions of the Vita, like the next generation of the PlayStation Vita, but it's not that.
It's definitely not. It's literally just like a little streaming box, and it's going to be great when somebody eventually hacks it.
Yeah, but you know what the funny thing is? I think you're right, though. I think it is, the dream is more, let's make it more like the Wii U, which, by the way, and no hate in here, but the Wii U was pretty awesome for what it did. But, yeah.
I think that's what we got, though.
Yeah, but we got the Switch, and I think the Switch has proven that the form factor.
Oh, no, I think that's what we got in terms of the podcast.
You mean done?
Yeah, I think we're finished. I think that's all we got.
I think we're done. I think the PlayStation Portal, we love it. Two thumbs up. Yep. 4 stars, Pop Zara. There you go. Put that on the box.
It's delightful. There you go. Knock yourself out.
That and Beyonce. You can't say enough good things. Corey, I think I like the new format. I think we went a little longer than we're going to in the future, but that's okay. But I think overall, I think I like it. I like it better, more consistent. And you know what? I don't feel dirty. I feel clean.
Don't feel dirty at all, huh?
I feel seen.
Well, that is delightful.
And with that, we will see everybody on the next level. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Pop Zara podcast. Remember to like, follow, share, and subscribe on your favorite podcast app or service.